You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I am Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Brent Hubbs. Big thank you, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been local and trusted since 1999. If you have a need for a new roof, siding, windows, repairs, contact Exterior Home Solutions today. That phone number is 865-524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Got a lot on the docket today. We're going to recap spring practice overall, the orange and white game, talk a little Tennessee recruiting, football, and basketball in the transfer portal, take a look at the baseball weekend. But first, the orange and white game. Brent Hubbs, we read your day after piece, so we'll start with Austin Price. What, big takeaways from the Tennessee spring orange and white game?
You know, Eric, I mean, I don't mean to sound negative, but I just don't know what you can really take away. And I don't think there's anything bad to take away from the game. I'm just saying I think you learned about individual athleticism. You learned about, you know, quarterback accuracy, ball placement, that type of stuff. As far as like actual units, like defense, offense, linebackers, you know, all that. I'm not sure I learned anything from that. Now, again, maybe I'm not as advanced as others, and they can take away a lot from the game. But, what I learned was Mike Matthews, pretty good athlete, right? I learned that Edwin Spillman is a pretty good athlete and can hit. I learned Chris Brazel will help this team. I learned that Boo Carter is a playmaker. Those type of things. As far as, like, individual units, I don't take anything away from it. But, again, I think there's still plenty of positives to take out of spring because I think Tennessee is a far deeper team than they have been at any point during the Josh Heupel era, including at the line of scrimmage, which is pretty obvious defensively. But I think they're pretty good offensively. They just got to get everybody healthy.
I'm going to choose joy here on Mike AP, but he was kind of getting there. Explosiveness. We talked about in the two-minute drill. I mean, there was a lot of explosive plays, and when you're playing yourself, it's like you're giving up plays in the secondary, and Jalen McMurray and Jordan Thomas and Jordan Matthews on three of them that come to mind. But a little bit of explosiveness back in the Tennessee offense.
Well, I mean, I think there's, when you're playing against yourself, you can look at it like, hey, this guy's going to be really good, or you can look at it, man, they got some weaknesses at this spot, or that, boy, they need a little more depth here and that type of thing. I think spring, Rob Lewis, is all about individuals anymore. I mean, I think that that's what spring practice more than ever has become. It's about figuring out, I said it at the start of spring practice, who's above the line and who's below the line. It's not about finalizing your starting, spots at every position on the football field in the spring. It's coming out of there of, okay, this guy's ready to help us or close to being ready to help us. And it feels like, Rob, this team's got a lot of bodies that you think is going to be able to help them this fall.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it as, individuals as opposed to, the offensive line or the two deep, at this spot. I think that is a good kind of barometer for how you look at spring. And I think you probably felt like you saw some guys that were what you were hoping. I don't know necessarily to the James Pierce level last year, where you had that guy circled as somebody that had to come through. But yeah, I mean, the receivers that, Brazel that you're talking about coming in, or Mike Matthews as a young guy, as AP Bitch and Boo Carter. And I thought Spillman really, flashed in some limited action. My overall takeaway would be depth. I mean, if you really want to pin me down and say, what's your biggest takeaway from spring? And I would say improved depth in the secondary. I feel like you have a lot of guys at wideout. And, I mean, how can you didn't see any kind of pressure cooker, but you just have to continue to be excited about Nico. There's no getting around that one.
No, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, he's got a ton of ability. You can see that. I'll say this, too. I mean, I don't think if Nico were to miss some time for some reason that Tennessee's not going to miss a beat. I think that's unrealistic for anybody to think. But I did think those two backup quarterbacks were fully functional. We're highly functional guys. I don't think if you had to start one of them, you're going to go out and score 45 points or anything crazy like that. But I thought both Gaston Moore and Jake Merklinger were both pretty functional players, Eric, on Saturday. I was, you know, that was a takeaway for me is just, you know, how comfortable they looked out there. And I know there were some limitations on the other side of the ball, but they seemed pretty comfortable on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And I was talking, maybe it was with you on Saturday. I was talking with somebody about it. You don't want Nico to get hurt, obviously. If Nico were to lose a helmet, if Nico were to go out for a quarter for three or four drives, I think this offense would be just fine. Now, if Nico were to miss a month, then that's a different story. But to your point, I think that you knew Gaston Moore was going to go out there and ball out in the orange and white game. He does it every year. He knows this offense. He said it in post-game interviews. He's like, listen, I was with the staff at UCF. I know this offense pretty much better than anybody is pretty much what he said. And I would agree with that. There's a lot of trust there. And AP, I was going to bring up Jake Merklinger with you. I talked with Matt about this on Sunday. Not that I didn't have expectations for him in this game, but he surprised me a little bit. They called a design quarterback run in an orange and white game where he can't touch the quarterback. The first play he was in there, I thought that was funny. But his elusiveness, eyes down the field, making some plays, made some nice throws, and then on the touchdown throw, just the—I mean, I know he's a quarterback. You got to be smart to, you know, to play in that position, but just the football IQ to know, hey, it's a free play. Let me take a shot here. And to Chris Braswell's credit, he just went. He beat Jalen McMurray, who was going full go on the play, made a nice throw for a touchdown. I was really impressed with both Gaston Moore and Jake Merklinger.
Yeah, I don't think it's hard not to be impressed, with what Merklinger got done. Do I think he would be number two if the season started today? No, I think it'd be Gaston Moore, but I think you walk away feeling like, okay, like, you know, as Hub said, and then Rob reiterated, like if you had to go that direction for whatever reason, you could potentially, depending on the opponent, survive it. And that was one of the big questions all, you know, off season, right? I mean, how many people clamored for another quarterback? And, you know, I mean, again, I think you saw Saturday, those guys are capable of being playmakers for the offense if they had to turn to them for whatever reason.
Here's my other take, my other big picture takeaway from the offense. Is the style the what they did offensively, the number of throws over the middle, the slants, and some of the things that you saw, four or five targets to the tight ends. We've talked about it all offseason. We felt like this passing game was going to be different, maybe more explosive, as we saw with a few plays, but going to be more open from the standpoint of the middle of the field is going to be a barometer and a factor for this offense. And I think that showed up in the spring game. You know, and I think that's a takeaway for what this offense might evolve into or can evolve into this fall, is that the middle of the field is going to be a greater part of the passing game than it was at any point a season ago.
I would agree with that. I mean, you're essentially taking a third of the field away, and that's kind of where this offense was a lot of the times last year. And I only saw, memory serves me correct, one screen pass. And of course went for a touchdown. It was a Dayton Snead there, but there was a lot to, as you mentioned, the tight ends. There was a lot to some of these guys over the middle of the field, and that was really, really good to see. And more than that, you know, scanning, not just going on first read, sitting back there and when opportunity allowed to sit back there. I know a couple of times that wasn't the case, but going for your first read to your second progression, then making that throw. I don't think they got to the third read a lot of times, but saw a couple of those incidents on Saturday, and I think that's a good sign, Rob. But overall, I think that, you know, for an offense that didn't have, you know, three starting offensive linemen, and it was very much, you can say first team offense, but it wasn't really a first team offense. A lot of good things. It was a slow start for Nico's group, 2-3 and outs, didn't get a first down. And then he led him down the field and threw a nice pass to Chaz Nimrod out of the slot for a touchdown. Like what I saw from that group and from the offense overall.
Just like Grid Hub said earlier, I mean, you got to be, the defensive line, you knew that was going to be a strength, but then you have to take it with a grain of salt, because if you want to nitpick with the offense, even with Nico out there, they really struggled to run the ball. I mean, that was – but again, it's not entirely surprising when you talk about who didn't play on the offensive line, what you bring back on the defensive line. You know, what. So if you want to nitpick, I mean, that would be a concern, but also, you know, it just, you know, it highlights what everybody's saying about the defensive front. So I came away probably, if you want to ask me about the offense, wow, Nico looks about as good as, you know, everybody thought, and you've got some juice at wideout.
However, I think for Nico, the biggest thing is the ability to process things. And that's the one thing everybody talks about internally is his ability to process, you know, things live so much faster. I think that's the biggest difference in this offense in 2024 than it was in 2023.
And Hubbard, to your point, don't you think that's why they're not afraid to work the middle of the field like sure. You're seeing?
Sure. You know, I mean, I have the luxury of sitting next to Pat Ryan, you know, during broadcast, and we talk a lot of football during the week before you get ready for a game. And we talked a lot about Nico leading into the bowl game, and then we talked about him after the bowl game. And Pat's an old former quarterback who's highly critical of quarterbacks. I mean, he doesn't hold back a lot of times when you're having a conversation with him about quarterbacks. And just, you know, what he's impressed with Nico is just his feel. What you're talking about, AB, the pocket presence, the processing, the feel he has for the game, the ability to keep his eyes downfield and understand where some pressure might be coming from, and the ability to step and move. I think that just is why this coaching staff really likes where they are and the potential they can be with this offense moving forward. Because, you know, he's a guy, if there's a free rusher, he can make somebody, you know, he can make a guy miss, step up and make a play. I mean, they can do some true RPO things with Nico as well. So there's a lot of excitement about where they are with Nico right now because of what you're talking about, Austin. And yeah, Rob, to your point, I think that's why they're comfortable with him throwing it wherever on the around the field.
Quickly, before we switch gears and talk a little bit of recruiting and the effect the orange and white game can have on Tennessee's recruiting, big picture stuff leaving spring. You know, AP didn't find a left guard, didn't find a true backup center. Still got some things going on in terms of the pecking order, who's three, who's four, who's five at cornerback and at safety. But you knew you weren't going to get a lot of those answers here in spring practice. This was going to go on in the summer and on into to fall camp. Felt like, and I think Brent mentioned this somewhere, you feel much better about the tight end room than you did coming into spring, because I think Miles Kitzelman's a guy that we didn't really bank on being a guy that could help him, and I think that he's kind of there. And then a lot of other, you know, individual things on the line of scrimmage that you like, specifically on the defensive line. Overall, your thoughts, big takeaways from spring here as we head on into the next phase of the offseason?
I mean, I think we knew Miles Kitzelman could be a blocking portion, but, I mean, I don't think you ever want someone who is
– all-around tight end.
When he goes in, you know what they're doing, right? Like, I think the ball skills, you know, him, his ability as a pass catcher, I thought, you know, was the big surprise of all the surprises in spring. You know, be interested to see what they do, you know, with the running back situation. You know, we're taping this on Monday. Portal opens, you know, today, and, you know, be interested to see what they do. They're having discussions about it early in the week, and we'll see if they like to go that route or not. You know, offensive line, you know, the left guard spot, you have too many guys just missing. Lampley basically missed all spring, at least the back part of it. You know, Kerrig missed all of spring. You know, you got to kind of figure some things out. What did you feel like you got out of Sham Umarov, you know, this spring? Clearly he feels more confident than he ever felt a year ago. Talked to him in the complex after the spring game, and he, you know, he was kind of all smiles, like, you know, and this is a kid that normally just walks in and he's just kind of like flatlined. But I mean, he was kind of like, I felt like, you know, I got a lot of confidence coming out of this. And, you know, and then again, just figuring out where they're at in the back end of the secondary. I love where they're at with the depth at wide receiver. You know, again, there's a lot of positive takeaways heading into summer.
I think the biggest blessing for that offensive line is all those young guys got beat up.
They did.
And I don't mean that in a negative way, Rob. I mean, I think you got to get bloodied and beat up. And, you know, instead of Cooper Mays taking a bunch of reps, Vyson Lane got all of them at center that he could physically handle. So, now you have a better idea of whether or not he can help you. When we talk about above the line and below the line, if you will, same thing with those freshmen and the redshirt freshmen. I mean, to me, the spring was a blessing for the offensive line because you're either going to have depth there, Rob, or you're going to sit there, you're coming out of spring going, all right, none of these guys aren't close. we're going to have to go get some help. I mean, you know exactly where you stand on your, you should know exactly where you stand on your offensive line because of all the reps those young guys got all spring long.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, now that, I mean, when you paint it like that, I mean, it did turn out to be a blessing in disguise. I mean, it forced the staff's hand. You know, you had a bunch of kids who had never played, you know, any, you know, or at least a lot of meaningful snaps in the SEC going against, you know, one of the deepest, most experienced lines in the SEC, you know, on a daily basis. So if you don't get better from that, Hubbard, if kids don't improve, then coaches, like you say, you at least know that you got to go find somebody. Because, you know, if you don't, like AP's talking about, I mean, it sounds like Umarov, like that was great for him. Now, it may not have been great for somebody else. But, you know, if it wasn't, then those kids got exposed in over the last month, I would guess.
Yeah, in the film room. I just think, Eric, I mean, a guy like Sham Umarov getting, you know, double the amount of reps he would have gotten if Andre Kurek had been out there and Javonte Spragans had been out there and Jackson Lampley had been out there, your evaluation of that is different. I mean, this guy went with the first team essentially every day in the spring, and he also went with the second team some of the time in the spring. Yeah. I mean, I just those reps are so they're just invaluable for them to get, and you wouldn't have gotten it if you'd have had all your pieces out there because you'd have been trying to rotate all your bodies in there and everything else.
And again, like we talked about on the 2-minute drill, I mean, it's not like they're just getting these reps. They are getting these reps against grown men who are 22, 23 years old on the other side. That's just it's incredible experience that you're getting. Even we talk about this defensive line, 2-3 deep and not lose a step. I mean, in there on the interior, Omar Norman Lopp, Bryson Eason, Big O, Jackson Moy coming over as an older guy. David Hobbs is, and I know he missed the spring game, but David Hobbs is no longer a 5-star freshman anymore. And then, of course, we didn't even talk about the exterior guys. Elijah Simmons, big body guy. I mean, you are getting tons and tons of work over experienced guys. And so, yeah, I think that's great for a guy like Sham. I think it's great for a guy like Vyson Lane, William Satterwhite. Pick your poison, Max Anderson, Jesse Perry, all those guys. It's only going to help them for sure. And especially those guys who will be in real contention to help this team out in the fall, like a Sham that you mentioned. So Tennessee spring football, it is over. The orange and white game has come and gone, but there were several prospects who were in-house who take in that orange and white game, making a repeat appearance back on Rocky Top, 5-star offensive tackle, David Sanders, Austin Price. What do you know the latest on how that visit went with David Sanders? And then another pivotal offensive tackle, such as Jalen Matthews.
Visit went as well as it could. Again, I will continue to reiterate, Tennessee has done as well as they could possibly do with David Sanders, as we said here on April 16th. Like, this is a situation where I'm not going to say Tennessee's the leader, but I don't think Tennessee necessarily trails a bunch of schools either. Like, I think that, you know, they're right there at the top for him. Family very comfortable with Glenn Ellerbe, very comfortable with Josh Heupel. They love the family atmosphere. They spent a lot of time around Trey Smith this weekend at the Orange and White game. And there's no greater ambassador for Tennessee football than that guy. Spent time around Jalen Matthews, George McIntyre, the entire team. And again, has now been here for basically 4 to 5 days total in the last couple of weeks when you factor in both weekends and kind of the amount of time he spent in Knoxville. So we'll be back for his official visit in June. And, the rubber's going to meet the road here over the next few months for David Sanders as he winds this thing down and Tennessee is positioned well, as we said here, the middle part of April.
What is the next step for Jalen Matthews?
I don't see him taking any more visits. Would expect him to probably, you know, come to some type of decision, you know, about, you know, late May, early June, going to officially visit Tennessee in June. Miami, Georgia, Tennessee, all in the mix there. Again, another one that Tennessee is positioned well with as we head into the summer months. And a kid that, you know is a mountain. He's a big, physical, you know, athletic tackle who, you know, has a mean disposition, but it's super nice off the field. But on the field, I don't think I'd want to meet him. Tennessee's wanting to add multiple talented tackles in this class, and, you know, I think he could be one.
And they've done a terrific job of getting tackles on campus all spring long. I mean, Jalen Matthews has been here twice now since the first of the year, right, AP?
Yes.
David Sanders has been here back-to-back weekends. We've had one Gaston in town as well. I mean, of all the positions on the football field, they've done as good a job at tackle as they have anywhere in terms of getting guys on campus for extended visits, not just popping through for a couple of hours. I think that's been a huge thing for them this spring, AP.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, to be honest with you, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who, you know, Tennessee's done a pretty good job, and it's not fail-proof, but they, who they've gotten in for the 865 live event at the end of May, Memorial Day weekend, you know, leading into official visits. So basically you get those kids in twice in a, you know, 3-4 week span. Their hit rate's been pretty good. And so, you know, it'd be interesting to see who they're able to say, hey, come back in for this event unofficially before your official visit, and to get those guys around other recruits and so on and so forth. So, I mean, just kind of be interested to see who does Darrell Sims get in from a running back standpoint? Who does Glenn Ellerby get in from an offensive line standpoint? You know, does Matthews make it back in that weekend? What about David Sanders? What about a guy like Josh Petty? You know, all those things are, you know, bear watching over the next 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, we don't have to go through an exact list here, but other guys who highlighted on the site already, had good conversations, good visits, Charles House, Bryce Jenkins, Derek Meadows, Joakim Dotson, Tennessee's current commit, shutting things down. You guys have a story about that over on Monday. Any other highlights from the weekend and some things to preview for the week ahead?
Well, you know, I thought Tennessee did a really nice job with Derek Meadows, who I thought, you know, Tennessee was fringe in it coming into the visit. You know, they went out and saw him back when Coach was right on the road in January. And then, you know, they had been trying to get him up here. They get him here, and I think he'd had a really nice time. Spent a lot of time around George McIntyre, spent a lot of time around, you know, Sanders and Matthews and those guys. You know, obviously knows of Tennessee because Marcus Nash, who coached him there at Bishop Gorman. He knows of Tennessee because Cedric Tillman, who, again, played there at Bishop Gorman. So, you know, you're competing against Georgia, Alabama, those type teams. Those are the teams to watch for, you know, a kid that legit is about 6'6", because he's a little taller than George McIntyre. Side by side, he was a little bit taller. So, I mean, this kid's got an incredible amount of upside. Charles House, that's a Tennessee-Georgia battle for the defensive lineman from Charlotte, North Carolina. He's already announced he will make his decision on June 22nd. You know, it'd be interesting to kind of see how this, you know, this next, you know, stretch goes for him. But, you know, to me, it's definitely between the Bulldogs and Vols. Mom and Dad really like it here at Tennessee. And then the last one was, you know, Bryce Donovan Jenkins. And, you know, again, he's not taking a ton of visits. And so it'll be interesting to see kind of where he's at in the process, because it feels like it's still very early for him, because, again, he's not went many places. So, you know, what happens with the big kid from just outside of Washington, D.C.? And he looked as good as any kid that was on campus over the weekend. Big
defense. 6'4", 324. Is that accurate, AP?
It's pretty close. And, yeah. And again, it's a well put together.
Yeah. Weight.
Like, I thought he has toned him. And maybe when he was here in late January, he was just wearing big clothes. But it looks like he has toned up a lot the last couple of months. And he said he had. Now, again, it's easy to say, but he looked like he was in much better shape than when he was here at the end of January.
I think by definition, he's wearing big clothes whenever he leaves the house.
Well, true, but it was – he just looked – he was in a T-shirt
Saturday. I know. I understand.
It looked really impressive.
Well, that's interesting, because those things matter, right? There have been recruits before that – didn't look really, you didn't think a whole lot about. Then all of a sudden they show up in a Schmedium T-shirt, and all of a sudden the coach is like, man, that guy looks good. He's well put together. He looks a lot better. He looks a lot bigger than what he did. I mean, all those things are kind of unique. Again, Jenkins, though, to me is another great example of what this recruiting office has done a good job of, and the coaches have done a good job of. I mean, he's from Washington, D.C. You got him here twice since the bowl game. Going through the orange and white game, and you know, you're probably going to get him back in June again. I mean, that's 3 visits in 5 months. That's where you got to be. AP, I think the wide receiver recruiting for this team is going to be pretty fascinating to watch too, because it feels like that board is actually broadening a little bit and not necessarily shrinking down. Maybe that's not fair, but I mean, French, they're in it big time with French. You just mentioned, you know, from Bishop Gorman there in Las Vegas. We know the in-state players that, that Tennessee's recruiting at the receiver position as well. That spot's going to be pretty fascinating to watch over the course of the next 2 or 3 months.
Well, it is. I think everybody just assumed, you know, you look at Rodarius Jackson, you look at Cam Sparks, you know, they're playing on the same 7-on-7 team as George. Those two would be, you know, very likely candidates for the class. And I still think they could be. But, you know, Tennessee is in it for Jamie French. They're in for Caleb Cunningham. They're in for Travis Smith. They're in it for Derek Meadows, Marcus Harris. You can go right down the line, and let's not forget about Thomas Blackshear out of the same high school as Jake Merklinger, who Tennessee is deep in it with as well. And in fact, I would say Tennessee, you know, kind of, you know, I won't say is the team to beat, but again, if he picked Tennessee tomorrow, I wouldn't blink an eye. Like, they're deep in that one.
And pretty deep board. Pretty deep recruiting board compared to what we've seen the last couple of years at that position.
Correct. And I mean, like, let's face it, like, you know, those in-state kids, I mean, like, I know they probably think, well, I'm in-state, I've got a spot. There's no guarantee of that. If a Blackshear pops in, you've already got Dodson, you know, and then again, let's say, you know, things get to June, those guys aren't in the boat. Derek Meadows wants in, somebody else wants in, you're full, you're done. And I mean, those kids will go elsewhere and it'll be what it'll be. But I mean, I like that Tennessee's doing this. You're not solely depending on these in-state kids. You're going to go out and you're going to recruit some really high-end guys. You know, I mean, Blackshear, you know, again, is someone who is a top 300 player with On3, continues to rise up the boards for several. And it'll just kind of be interesting to see how all this goes. But don't forget about Bryce Thomas Jenkins. Dad played basketball here. So there is a familiarity with Tennessee back in the 80s, Ron Housley. So, you know, that one will be an important one to watch over the next few months. But again, this feels like because he's not taking a ton of visits, kind of the infancy for him.
Last question I have for you, AP, and then we'll shift gears here to hoops. Talking about wide receiver, but specifically offensive tackle, is it fair to acknowledge and say, okay, good job in terms of broadening the board, getting more guys on campus multiple times, but also in that same realm saying, all right, now it's time to close. Got guys here. You're in it. Got to close.
Yeah, you were in it with a few guys a few years ago and even last year, and you couldn't close. So you're hitting the nail on the head. Like, they're in it on a much broader scope, much like Hubs talked about receivers. Offensive tackles, much the same way. You know, you're in it with Babalo. He's going to take an official visit, and he just, you know, continues to rise up the rankings with On3. You're in it with David Sanders. You're in it with Juan Gaston. You're in it with Jalen Matthews. You know, go right down the line. And even a guy like Josh Petty, who could play outside or inside, you started to reemerge as a contender there. So, like, your board is a lot bigger than it was in recent years. And what I mean, like, they're not just kind of like a name on the or a hat on the table for some of these kids. They're a legit contender for every one of those kids I just named.
Good to hear. Got to close, and we'll see if Tennessee can close on into the summer months. Of course, June official visits, kind of the next, you know, you got the Memorial Day weekend coming up. That's the next huge recruiting weekend. Then you'll have June officials. Recruiting never stops, and we got it covered here at VolQuest.com. We'll talk transfer portal recruiting, Tennessee basketball here in a moment. But first, let's get a word from our buddies over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Severe weather can strike at any time in East Tennessee, and Mother Nature can do severe damage to the first and most important line of defense that you and your family have against Mother Nature, and that is your roof. Whenever she strikes, make sure that you call the people that I call. Make sure you trust the people that I trust, and that's my friends at Exterior Home Solutions, because they're more than friends, they're truly family.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
We are officially in off-season mode for Tennessee basketball, college basketball. That transfer portal window is open. We've seen Tobe Awaka, we've seen Jonas Adu, Freddie DeLeon, we've seen DJ Jefferson leave the roster at the time of this recording. Rob Lewis, tell us about a couple of the visitors who are here over the weekend in Darlington Sohn-Dubar and Kay Tyson.
Well, aside from having a fabulous name, Darlingstone Dubar, I think Tennessee probably feels pretty good about their chances exiting that visit. You know, had a chance, you know, to talk with him and his father yesterday after their visit. Briefly, they were in a rush to make an early flight, but just, you know, quick impression overall, just really positive about Tennessee. The connect effect. I mean, I think anybody that's a perimeter, you know, player would, you know, with offensive strengths in their game, I mean, that's Tennessee's going to have a pretty good selling point, you know, about what they can do, how they can integrate you into their offense, you know, pretty quickly if you're a veteran guy that has been around. So I think that visit went really well in talking with him and his dad. And again, I don't want to go too hard on that one, but they were pretty clearly impressed with Tennessee. You know, do they take some more visits? That's, you know, Tennessee obviously wants to shut that one down this week. They mentioned, you know, maybe going to see USC and Eric Musselman. To me, when we spoke on Sunday, and Tennessee obviously is going to try to make sure that visit doesn't happen. But I think Tennessee sits in a good spot with Dubar after his visit. Cade Tyson, you know, have not been able to get in touch with him afterwards. But I know a lot, you know, just talking to a lot of people, people felt like that was going to be a tough pull for Tennessee, or will be a tough pull for Tennessee, just because, you know, grew up in the Charlotte area. Obviously, not surprising, a lot of people over there grew up liking Carolina. Carolina is set to get the next visit. You know, he got out of Tennessee without committing, which wasn't a negative, but I don't think anybody expected him not to visit North Carolina. So, you know, that's the challenge for Tennessee, and I don't know if Tyson will shut it down after the Tar Heels visit. A lot will depend on how things go with him this week there. But, you know, I think Tennessee made a really strong impression, but I also think Tennessee felt on the front end that was going to be a tough one. You got Igor Milicek coming in today. We're taping this on Monday, so Tuesday he's coming in. Kind of a stretch four type guy from Charlotte. Shoots it really well, 6'7", 6'8", guy. Long, you know, not just a stretch four, can also, you know, rebound a little bit. We'll see. You know, I think you just kind of wonder about his physicality in the SEC, but he's a guy that can shoot it with good size. Again, 6'8", listed at 6'10" last year. I'm not sure he's exactly that tall, but he is a long guy that can mix it up. And, you know, we'll see. I would anticipate we'll hear a handful of names pop up, and even though Tennessee doesn't have an official visitor scheduled beyond Milicek, who's in midweek, I'd be stunned if we don't see some names pop up over the next few days of guys that they're bringing onto campus.
Rob, is there anything with Tobe? I mean, is there conversations there? I mean, obviously nobody knows what's going to happen for sure, but is there dialogue taking place, or is that ship sailed?
Yeah, that door's open for him to come back. I don't want to say the ship has sailed. Now, I don't know where he is on making a decision. We've also, you know, nothing out there about him, you know, taking visits or whatnot. And, you know, again, I'm sure 90% of schools in the country have a kid like this they can point to. But, I mean, I think Tobe's just an example of, you know, really one example of where the portal is, what it's done to teams and coaches. Because I don't think, my opinion in talking to some people, I don't think Tobe, you know, wanted to leave at all or wants to leave. I think Tobe wants to play 24, 25 minutes a game somewhere and know that's what is going to happen. And, you know, now that opportunity is certainly there at Tennessee. But when he entered the portal, you know, thinking that Jonas was coming back, that wasn't the case. And again, it's not just these kids making decisions. I mean, AP, you know this from the football side as well. There are a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And coaches have to deal with it.
Yeah, 100%. And for fans, like, understand if the kid leaves, don't blame the kid. Like, sometimes, especially if they're young, like, I'm not saying, like, if you're 23, it's different. But, like, they're getting pulled and you know, 100 different directions. And a lot of times they're just trying to make everybody happy and they don't know what to do.
And a lot of times it's not a well-meaning mom or dad, you know, telling you, hey, let's look around. It's maybe somebody that has their own interests at heart.
Rob, I got a question for you. And I know times have changed and it's never been like this before. And so you've got to adapt. it just feels like, and you know him so much better than I know him, obviously, like Rick Barnes, it just feels like it wouldn't be very Rick Barnes to let somebody who entered the portal back. Understanding, times are different now. I recognize that. Know the door's open if Tobey wants to do that. But what's your thoughts on that? It just feels kind of weird and not very Rick Barnes-esque to allow that to happen, but it would be the best interest of the basketball team, right?
Well, it's just, yeah, I can promise you he's negotiated that bridge a long time ago. If you're gonna keep coaching in this current climate, you got to get past that, and that's why I say that there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen, and certainly the coaches know that this is not like a, you know, Tobey Awaka slap in the face to Rick Barnes, and Coach Barnes knows that better than anybody. And so my point being, though, that's not going to be a problem.
I think the biggest thing, Rob, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the biggest thing with Tobey is he didn't leave to go get a bag. He left just because he wants to play. And right. I think Rick understands that. Any coach understands the kid just wants to play. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, he was leaving for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. And had he known Jonas was walking out the door a day later, he probably doesn't go in.
Yep. And as one coach told me, you know, not too long after all this started, you can't get mad at the kids. I mean, you just can't. I mean, if you know, maybe in some, you know, certain instances, that's going to be unavoidable. But, you know, in the majority of cases, you have to realize that, you know, maybe this 19 or 20 year old guy is not the, you know, person that's really driving the decision here.
Rob, I mean, how hard is this chaos to manage? Is it harder than football? Because football's got the two windows. The window in December is a little longer. Now, football's changing because the playoff emergence there, and that may make it harder to deal with. But for coaches right now, I mean, you're not very far removed from the season just abruptly ending on you, and then all of a sudden there's not really a lot of time to decompress. How tough is this to stay organized and managed, you think, not just for Rick Barnes in Tennessee, but for college football or college basketball in general?
Oh, I think it's crazy. I don't know if it's harder than football, but it's different, and it's different because of the reasons you said, the timetable, the difference in having two windows. But I mean, it's nuts, and it's a huge part of, you know, of building your team. I mean, the fact that this element, this aspect of the offseason didn't even exist 5-6 years ago, and now it literally is maybe the most crucial aspect of roster building, you know, in college basketball. I mean,
because one guy can make a total difference. See Dalton Kinect,
and he can make it right then. I mean, like, right. He can make it in November, as opposed to, I mean, you can. I mean, how many Tennessee's had four one and done guys in the last three years? Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer, Julian Phillips. Who did I miss? Kennedy. Those are big time recruits that they spit. I mean, I would bet you they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. We're talking about planes, hotel rooms, official visits, recruiting those kids. And I'm not disparaging them. Did any of those kids make a tenth of the impact that Dalton Kinect made that you recruited for 2 weeks in April? I mean, not even close. I mean, it's not even close. And it's just flipped college basketball recruiting on its head, because why do you want to start chasing the kid when he's a sophomore, that even if he's fantastic and good, I mean a sophomore in high school, why do you want to put in hours and hours of effort into that kid when, if he's great, good enough to leave and be a first round NBA draft pick, is still not going to have the kind of impact that Adult Connect is going to have, not even be close. So it's wild. I mean, and because Hubbard, one guy can make so much more difference, or just two or three guys can make so much difference.
Well, and listen, bringing them in can make a difference, but losing them can make a dramatic difference.
Yeah, it works both ways. Absolutely.
I mean, it's crazy. I don't know how coaches know even who they're talking to or names of guys, because this is a sport that's used to recruiting a guy for 2 or 3 years, and now you're recruiting him for 3 days or 2 or 3 weeks at the most. I mean, it's you better be organized, because it's just really fast paced and really different.
And I think this may be more of a case by case basis, but I think it takes some of the guesswork too out of your evaluations, because
it puts more guesswork into how they fit culturally.
100%. I mean, that is super important. I mean, if you bring in a cancer you're going to regret it really quickly, really quickly. I mean, because it can just blow up a locker room. When you've got 13 guys in there, one really bad dude could just destroy it, could derail it. It's, you know, I think Tennessee's culture is a good defense against that. But I just also just it's just incredible how much the one dude can make, or, you know, the two dudes or the three dudes. And it's there's nothing like it. And I mean, to Rick Barnes's credit, man, he's not shied away from it. He embraces it. I mean, I'm not saying he loves it, but he deals with it. You know, this is the landscape. I want to coach college basketball. This is what you have to do to coach college basketball.
All right, Eric, let's talk a little baseball here as we get out the door. Tennessee gets a weekend sweep over LSU. I thought this was Tennessee's best weekend of baseball to date. And I thought they played well in the opening weekend tournament in Dallas. But I think when you look at a three-game set, this was Tennessee's best weekend. Fair or not fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And before I kind of get into it, I do want to get this out in the open. D1 Baseball, which is the real rankings that we follow here, has Tennessee still at number 4 for this week. Kentucky has moved up to number 3. So this weekend, it's going to be number 4 at number 3. It's going to be a huge, huge weekend of baseball. But this past weekend, yeah, I would say that's fair completely, Brent. Tennessee found a different way to win. I mean, the offense was not popping for 15 runs like it does on so many different occasions. The best hitting team in the SEC, the best extra base hitting team in the nation, yada yada, all that and more. It wasn't necessarily the case this weekend. It was Tennessee finding a way on the mound. It was AJ Causey bouncing back in his long relief role. It was Kirby Cannell, Andrew Binkie being used twice over the weekend in very different roles. It was Drew Beam navigating through so much traffic on the base paths and being typical Drew Beam. It was Nate Snead having so much adrenaline during his 6-out save that his cutter wasn't breaking. It was about Xander Seacrest giving you yet another good start on Sundays, and Aaron Combs having another back-to-back great appearance for Tennessee. It was good teams win series, great teams find a way to sweep. Tennessee did that, and great teams find a way to win in different ways. And the bats were quiet a lot of the times. On Saturday, you got no hit through your first 5 innings and a third, but the arms kept them in a lot of high leverage situations. So that was probably the best thing that, you know, happened this weekend for Tennessee. And they're starting to back up that they're being more and more deserving to be that number 4 ranked team in the country.
Well, the other thing to me that stood out about watching this weekend, I thought they were terrific behind the pitchers. I think this has been a good defensive team all year long. I think they're a really solid. This is the best defensive team we've seen Tony Vitello have in the last couple of years. That they've really bailed pitchers out of some tough situations with their glove, at all spots. I think this team, if you're a pitcher, you feel pretty good about what's behind you right now. You don't have to strike everybody out. They can go make a play for you. It's not just about those guys hitting a bunch of bombs and home runs and that type of thing. I mean, they could field it pretty well.
Yeah, no doubt. And how many times in years past, because of the offense being so good and so explosive, things like base running, things like poor defense at times didn't really come back to hurt you. But in the last 2 years, you've really needed to count on that. And Tennessee's defense has been really good this year. Everybody's wondering, you know, why is Hunter Ensley playing? Well, he knows how to hit in this league, and he's the best defensive outfielder on the team, and he just makes play after play, and he did that this weekend. We were talking in the press box a little bit this weekend about Christian Moore and his improved defense. He's going to make a bonehead play every now and again. He's going to make an error. He's probably the worst defender in the infield, but it's not like he's a liability anymore. He's improved so much over there at the Keystone, and Blake Burke is the most improved defender on this team, easily at first base. Billy Amick couldn't play defense, and I know his one error on Saturday resulted in the only run scored for LSU. That's baseball, but he couldn't play defense. He's been great at third base, and Dean Curley is a true freshman third baseman that's playing shortstop. And he's made a ton of plays over the weekend and really this season. So, yeah, Tennessee's defense, if you're a pitcher, if you're Drew Beam, he pitches to contact that he always has. You feel really good about your guys having your back out there and helping you kind of put some zeros on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I think Blake Burke's the best, most improved player on this team, period.
For sure.
At all levels, from what he's doing at the plate or doing in the field as well. You mentioned Kentucky up to number 3. I don't think anybody saw this coming from Kentucky. What is it about Kentucky that I know you'll have the full preview later, but what makes this series such a challenge? Why has Kentucky been so good to this point?
Yeah, I'll know a whole lot more later in the week about them, but they're just a well-rounded team. They don't necessarily do anything great, but they do everything like well, and they run well. They're going to be a running team, and you know, Cal Starr, Cannon Peebles, these Tennessee pitchers are going to have their work cut out for them trying to limit base runners and trying to control that. But they hit for average. They hit for a little bit of pop. They've been, you know, they've got some guys that not only cannot beat themselves, but they can beat you now. And Kentucky typically always gets off to a pretty good start in SEC play, and then they kind of fall back down to earth. Well, that hasn't happened yet. I mean, they've won some pretty big series. They just went on the road and swept Auburn, moved up 8 spots in the latest D1 baseball rankings up to number 3. So we'll see what happens. They're 30-5 on the season. Tennessee is 30-6. They're 14-1 in SEC play. Tennessee is 10-5. And so it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. But they run very well. They hit for above average and kind of up and down that lineup. It's not top heavy. It's not bottom heavy. It's a pretty well-rounded lineup that can get you kind of anywhere.
Yep. To contrasting styles, Tennessee wants to play for big innings and big bombs, and Kentucky's not afraid to play the small ball and sort of do it that way as well. So it'll be a fascinating series to watch between Tennessee and Kentucky. First, they got a midweek game against Bellarmine, which is probably another run rule game, possibly, Eric Kane, on Tuesday, I should say.
It better be. If it's not, I don't know what we're doing here, but yeah. Right. It'll be another complete waste of time that I'll write about in the 4 takes.
There you go. That is a big weekend for Tennessee baseball. Obviously, tons of stuff on the site. About Tennessee recruiting. Matt Ray and Austin have plenty of coverage of that. We've got plenty of React, plenty of things coming out of spring football. Continue to dive into that. And Rob Lewis and Grant Ramey are chasing portal, which is the greatest challenge in the world. Of course, football portal opens today, so we'll see what happens with Tennessee and the football portal as well in terms of coming and going. So lots of stuff going on at VolQuest.com. It's a great time to check us out. Be sure and take part in the promo we've got on our YouTube page. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure and like and subscribe to this on our YouTube page. And always join us at the General's Quarters for all the latest in Tennessee news and information. Eric Kane, I'm going to close this thing out. I've acted like I've done this once or twice before. So that's going to do it for this edition of the VolQuest.com podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. He is Rob Lewis, Austin Price, and Eric Kane. I'm Brent Hubbs. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest podcast every week here on VolQuest.